Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This week's episode of Millions of Screens is sponsored by HBO Max's The Flight Attendant, nominated for 9 Emmys, including Outstanding Comedy Series and Outstanding Lead Actress in a Comedy Series for Kaley Cuoco. Stream now on HBO Max. Hello and welcome to Millions of Screens. I'm creative producer Leo Garcia, joined as always via Zoom by TV Awards editor Libby Hill and TV Deputy editor Ben Travers. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about the Mike White Lotus, amongst other things.
How long have how long have you had that in your pocket?
I mean, I wrote it on Slack earlier. It was
an hour.
It's a couple hours. Yeah, an hour or two. Plus, we'll be talking about that Lord of the Rings image that was unveiled. One still. Are we excited? Who knows? And then Ben's going to catch us up on the Olympics.
I'm not going to promise that I'm going to catch you up on all of the Olympics. If NBC can't do it as a company with 15 stations, then I can't do it as a solo.
Can't you shut up? I'm busy. Boy, what a great show.
But I will talk about it. All right. We'll learn some things that you will be shocked by.
Shocking revelations about the Olympics. Skipping ahead to the clicker, our recap of the biggest news items from this past week. We'll start with some happy news. Ben, it was reported today that Tuca and Birdie has been renewed for season 3 at Adult Swim. How happy did this make you? Did this news make you?
I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the Leftovers season 3 renewal, which is the pinnacle of all renewals. You just didn't know if it was going to happen, but you wanted it to happen. You needed it to happen, and then it did. I'd say this is probably like a 9. Like, it's pretty high on the list. I had a good feeling that if they were going to go through all of the trouble of kind of reviving this show to begin with, that they wouldn't be done with it after one season. But, you know, nothing's for sure in this world. I had no idea what the ratings had been or how happy, you know, the network had been with the demographics they'd pulled in with the new season. But per the press release, they'd seen a nice spike in teen audience. They'd seen a nice spike in young women watching. They'd competed very well on Sunday nights at the 11:30 time slot, which, you know, good for them. But also, you know, I'd heard kind of extraneously, like in the ethers, that they'd been happy with it, that Adult Swim did like what it was doing, and that, you know, it is pretty essential for their network right now, considering their history with female creators and animation. And Lisa Hanawalt is obviously a huge talent that everyone should covet and should be going after and listening to and hearing pitches from whenever she wants to make anything. So if she wanted to make a season 3, that should have been all there was to it. She does. They're making it. I'm thrilled. And lest we forget, still 2 episodes left in season 2, August 8th and 15th. I think the finale is the 15th.
That is correct.
So make sure to check that out. Great news. Great news.
This is totally off topic, but sort of along the same lines. Ben, how was your baseball trade deadline? Good?
Earlier this week, Amazon unveiled the first shot of their $450 million television show. That's for a season. That's for a season. Singular. Supposedly, yes. Lord of the Rings TV series. It's set to premiere September 2nd, 2022, on Amazon Prime. What do you think, guys? How could a show that cost this much not be the greatest show of all time?
I mean, I loved the first image. I've actually had it as my background since, it was released with Windows Vista. So, yep.
I had to look this up. For those who are looking at the photo, it could potentially be the elven capital of Linden in the glorious human island kingdom of Numenor.
I was reading a take where they were saying that those might be the two trees of Valinor, but that would mean that this is set in the first age and not the second age, and I don't understand any of that. I'm sure fucking the show will dork. Explain it very clearly to me, though, and everything will be fine. Because, honestly, guys, going back to your question about the Cubs trade deadline, I think maybe it just broke me. I think I might be a broken person now, because I'm choosing to be optimistic about the Lord of the Rings show. I think it's going to be great. I think they spent a great amount of money, and they're going to give us something that we've never seen before, and it's going to be so exciting, and I'm excited for it. I'm just going to be excited for it, because you know what? I enjoyed the original trilogy, and I enjoyed the Hobbit trilogy at times, probably more than I should have. So maybe I will enjoy this more than I should have.
You're a 48 frames per second guy. You love that 48 frames per second. Can't
I
get
didn't
enough
mind
of
that.
It.
That was actually fine. That worked out okay. But so here we go. I'm leaning in. I've got hot takes coming next week when it comes to the Emmys. This is the first of probably a bunch of hot takes on this podcast. Lord of the Rings, Amazon series, going to be great.
All right, and skipping ahead to our last item in the clicker. Ben, you wanted to update Libby and I on something you noticed about NBC and Peacock's Olympic coverage. I want to note that since last week, I have not watched a single frame on Peacock, despite being someone who pays for Peacock.
Yes, so I have been keeping up somewhat with the Olympics. We've been trying to get some coverage up surrounding how NBC has been covering the Olympics, and probably by the time this podcast is available, you'll be able to read a very thorough analysis from Steve Green, the Recommendation Machine, in which he kind of outlines how NBC is still presenting the Olympic Games as a TV show built around narrative and characters, as opposed to a sporting event built around, you know, the visceral thrill of watching live sports, which is how most audiences are trained to watch the Olympics. So it kind of creates a bit of frustration for everyone, but that is neither here nor there. I'm here to tell you, in hot take number two, that the Snoop Dogg and Kevin Hart co-hosted Olympics highlights show on Peacock is good, actually. I do not give one iota of care for either of those people. I think Snoop Dogg's great. Kevin Hart has been in movies that are entertaining, I guess. But I had no plans on watching this until a rather influential Twitter account tweeted out a hot take similar to what I just said, where they were like, if you're not watching this, you should be. And I was like, okay, I'll check it out. I'll see what they're doing on the show. And to be honest with you, I think the reason that it works is because it embodies the failure of NBC overall and kind of, you know, conditions that failure into this half an hour highlight show that's like half ad-libbed, half just kind of read off of cue cards, and then, you know, is broken up with kind of interviews and actual highlights that are almost secondary, because it feels like they've given up. It feels like NBC has just been like, listen, we know that you're going to try to get through. You're going to go to every channel. You're going to go to NBC Core. You're going to go to NBC Sports, which will be canceled by the end of the year. It'll be gone. You're going to go to USA Network. You're going to search through your satellite and cable subscriptions, trying to find the channel with the thing that you want to watch, and you're never going to find it. And when you do find it, it'll be over, and you'll be upset. You'll be like, oh, I got 3 minutes of the thing I wanted to watch, and now I have no idea how to get more of it. I want to go back, and I can't. It doesn't work that way. Oh, maybe I'll try Peacock. They have live replays. So you go to Peacock and you try to bring up the replay, but it's not available until tomorrow, so you can't watch it yet. And even when it is available, the camera angles are really bad and you can barely see what's going on, and they don't use replays and they don't treat it like a real broadcast. They just put it out there. I think Steve Green referred to this as you're watching from security cam footage. Like, you just have a camera positioned in the corner and you just kind of watch it play out, and you're like, well, I guess I did say that I saw that it happened and that's all that I really wanted, but it would have been nice to be able to tell what was going on. So you've gone through all of that. You've tried every channel, you've done everything you can, and you're just frustrated. You're very angry. So you're like, I need a break. Screw it. I'm going to watch the Kevin Hart Snoop Dogg highlight show. And then they start swearing. And you're like, whoa, you're swearing? This is weird about the Olympics on an NBC program? This doesn't feel right. And then Snoop Dogg goes into a tirade about how the Olympics don't pay their athletes and they make them sleep on cardboard beds and they're mistreating them, basically. It's like, oh, yeah, that's terrible. He makes some weird joke about how the triathlon has to happen in Bermuda because that's where the Bermuda Triangle is, and triathlons and triangles are cousins. And all of this is just, it's completely off the cuff. You can, like, they're talking over each other. They're just having a conversation about whatever they want. Their little box, like, of them talking pops up in the corner as you're watching the highlight, and it takes up at least a quarter of the screen, so, like, you're being blocked from seeing some of the highlights themselves, so you can tell that they don't really care about you watching the sporting event. Like, there's a shot in that last episode I watched, there was a shot of somebody dismounting and landing in gymnastics, and you couldn't see their legs. Like, they were blocked from view. And they actually talked about it. Like, Snoop Dogg made a joke about the landing, but you're like, well, I don't know what it looked like because you were in the way. And you're like, yeah, they've given up. And that kind of chaos was so soothing. It was like, this show understands how bad the rest of NBC's Olympics broadcast has been. And because of that, it provides me a deep catharsis. And I can just enjoy it. Even though I don't really care about either of the hosts, they just work well together. And it's fun. Like, it's just fun and unexpected. And I'm as surprised as I feel like you two probably are to hear it. Oh, wow. The show is called, it is officially titled Olympic Highlights with Kevin Hart and Snoop Dogg. So, like, even the title is them just giving up and being like, fuck this. We don't know what we're doing. We do know that they're going to need some sort of outlet for this. It's almost like the producers who were making this were so frustrated with, you know, their own limitations of distribution and presentation that they came up with this idea, like, in some sort of, you know, drunken brainstorming session where they were just venting to each other, and then somebody was like, no, I think we could make that. I think we could fit that in. We'll just hire some famous people and maybe it'll be okay.
Peacock had over a year to figure out what it was going to do with the Olympics. And if the best they can do is Olympic highlights with Kevin Hart and Snoop Dogg, like, what is going on at NBC Universal HQ? Why is no one going, oh, let's give it a flash of your name. Let's get the notice out about this thing. Oh, let's figure out a way so you can check out the events in a way that is easy for people to search. Like, getting fired? Someone has to get fired over this, right?
I mean, it'll depend on how the statistics are interpreted, and it will depend on the general kind of ad reaction to all of it. Like, there's been a lot of discussion about viewership being down about 50%. Which is a huge drop-off, but also, you know, they've got things to blame. They can blame, you know, that live sports haven't been the same since the pandemic started. They can blame the fact that, you know, there's no audiences in the stands, which I still don't really understand why it would affect ratings, but every rating story I read points that out and says there's no audiences, so clearly ratings are down. I'm like, doesn't matter to me as an audience member whatsoever.
Moving on from things that upset us, I guess Tuca and Birdie made us feel good, to a show that Ben has been applauding since the embargo lifted. We're talking about The White Lotus, the 6-episode miniseries from writer, producer, director Mike White. And there's 2 episodes left, 4 episodes have aired. Ben, why don't you sort of say your piece, and then Libby, you could be counterpoint. Or just agree with Ben.
I think I land somewhere in between.
Yeah,
How you feel, Leo, and how Ben feels, which is...
Right. We're a very well-rounded podcast when it comes to The White Lotus. Yes, this is, sadly, on my end, not like an overt praise fest. But I feel like I've talked about this before on the podcast. I know I've written about it in the review. And I was lucky enough to host the opening night screening of the show at ATX Festival this year, which you can watch on YouTube now, which I highly recommend. because about 10 minutes in, I think Jennifer Coolidge goes on a tear that is just peak Jennifer Coolidge. So, like, if you're sitting there watching The White Lotus going, God, I want more Jennifer Coolidge, don't go back and watch American Pie again. Go watch, you know, this panel. You'll get peak Coolidge.
She is barely in American Pie.
I know, but, you know.
Of all the Jennifer Coolidge roles to throw out there.
If you're going to be desperate for Coolidge and you're going to make a bad decision, then I think American Pie is probably the worst. I mean, well, maybe not the worst. I'd have to look at the thing, but it's a bad one. Point being, The White Lotus is great. I adore it. I adored it as soon as it started. I adore every second of it. And I think it works on essentially every level that it's trying to operate at. Contrary to what Leo will tell you, it is very, very funny. It's an extremely funny show. I'm not going to recite the jokes back to you. That's what our forthcoming video series explaining the joke is for. But, I mean, Steve Zahn is introduced via a shot of his balls. Jennifer Coolidge and Natasha Rothwell are hysterical together. Their first session in the massage parlor is absolute comic genius. Like, the lines, the execution, like, everything about it is perfect. And then when you get down to kind of the granular stuff of exploring the characters through their clothes, obviously through the books that they're reading, that's one of the bigger things that people have latched onto during the show, but also through some of the offhand comments, you kind of get this rich tapestry of who they're supposed to be, who they kind of represent, and I feel like it only makes everything that they do funnier. And I think one of the things that maybe could be a hang-up for some people, I'm not saying anybody here, just could be a hang-up in general for watching this, is that it is designed to make you uncomfortable. It's not designed to make you kind of sit and easily appreciate and enjoy everything that's going on. There's a lot of complexity within it. And one of my favorite character notes that I think speaks to this is Alexandra Daddario's character. When she's talking to one of the college students who are judging her so ferociously from second one, she tries to explain that she is a journalist and she lives in New York and she's been working for a while, and then she met this guy and, you know, they just hit it off and she just loves him and she doesn't care about the money and blah, blah, blah. He's rich, whatever. But the detail that comes back to is, she says that she wrote a profile on one of their moms. She wrote a profile on Connie Britton. And then as the girls kind of stare at her without saying anything back, she backtracks. She goes, oh, it wasn't a profile. It was a profile of a profile. It was like a 10 women kicking the corporate world's ass type thing. And her earnest belief that that is the equivalent of a profile, of writing an actual, like, fully fledged sourced article with interviews of multiple people as well as the subject you're talking about, when in fact it's just a list that aggregates stories from elsewhere, from other people's hard work, speaks to the type of person that she is at this stage in her life. It speaks to the role that, you know, we see journalists embodying these days, and it speaks to kind of the disillusionment that she has with, you know, where she is in her life and where she's going. And yet at the same time, throughout the course of the series, the bigger story arc for her is that she is made a mistake. She is recognizing that the man she agreed to marry is a terrible person. And she's slowly, you know, having that dawn on her while she's supposed to be on her honeymoon. And you feel terrible for her and you want her to get out of it and you want her to, you know, be okay and succeed. And you feel for her. And you can have both of those emotions at the same time. Like, you can see that she is not, you know, the perfect reporter, the perfect journalist, the perfect, like, up-and-comer who's doing everything by the book and understands her role in the world and understands what, you know, people would value when you're sharing what you're the work that you're proud of. And you can also see her as somebody who, okay, you made a mistake. You need to get out of it. You need to, you know, come to terms with this stuff. And to me, that's what makes the show so good. Like, I think every character has those facets kind of built into them, and the way that they're laid out is not only done in a way that is extremely funny, but in a way that is extremely relatable, and that makes it incredibly uncomfortable to watch, and yet an incredibly rewarding experience to think about. So yeah, it's kind of the perfect show for me. I adore it, and I can't wait for you to see the end.
Someone's going to die.
They've mentioned that in the opening moments of the show, which is something that we love, right, Ben? We love when shows do that.
Ben was okay with it.
We don't.
Ben gave it a pass.
We love when shows do that, but we respect when it's done well, and I think it is done well here. I think that this is something that needed to be included to set the stakes, because otherwise you could be watching this and...
Well, we'll just say that Ben is okay with in media res when...
he likes the show.
When he likes the show.
Yeah.
If he does not like the show, he's not cool with it.
No, I think... I mean, I get what you're saying, Ben, but that opening also just, like... It filled me with a pit of dread, because Jake Lacey, my wife, watched a couple episodes the other day and came out and said, Jake Lacey's so good at playing a white man. And she said, I mean, obviously, but, like, you know what I mean. Like, Jake Lacey is so good at playing that white guy, like, that sucks. And he, yeah, to open with him, arguably one of the least sympathetic characters in The White Lotus, was a choice. And I have to say that when I started The White Lotus, I was really anticipating it because I love Enlightened, Mike White's show starring Laura Dern, critically acclaimed, completely unwatched. But I was anticipating The White Lotus, and immediately it made me uncomfortable. Now, they're talking a lot about class issues. We're talking about a lot of unpleasant people being unpleasant, which I sometimes, and I blame my Midwestern roots, I sometimes have trouble with. Because who wants to watch rich, shitty people be rich and shitty if it's not Succession? Which is a totally fair thing to say. But also, I have to say, like, I've seen so much love for, like, the theme, the main theme of White Lotus and the score, and they made me so anxious that I almost had to stop watching just because I was so physically uncomfortable. Like, it's very much a kind of cringe. Everyone is being the worst. And paired with a very anxious score, it was just, like, viscerally so unpleasant. I thought I was gonna have to tap out, but as I watched these first four episodes, like, with each episode I got more into the show's rhythm. I understood more what they were going for. Connie Britton just got funnier and funnier as the show went along, because holy shit, some of the things she says with a completely straight face are just laughably awful, I guess. And the thought that it's Mrs. Coach saying it is just mind-boggling. But I, you know, I like Mike White's ability to point out the foibles of rich white people and their sort of blindness to society and everyone else. So I enjoy that. I've never been blown away by Alexandra Daddario's work in previous projects, because I don't think that... I think she's stereotyped a lot. I think that she is cast for her face and her body, which is so unfair, because she's really, really a brilliant woman if you've read any of her writing. But she's definitely... as close as we're going to get to sort of an every person here, except for maybe the college friend. And I mean, which excludes everyone who is working class, I guess, in this show. But I think it's interesting. I'm very interested in seeing the last two episodes. So I don't love it. But I am into it. It did become sort of compulsively watchable so long as I had Xanax. So that's good. I think that's good.
I'll start with this preface. I think the show is fine. I think it is well made. I think it is well shot. There are moments of it that I think are really, really good. I think I react negatively when people are like, online seem to be like Succession 2.0, baby. This is the new... we fucking love this thing. The theme is fucking hitting. Like, we love this theme song. It's just like Nicholas Britell's Succession theme. And I'm like, hold your horses. Everyone, slow down. Let's all calm down. Everyone, off the ledge. Relax. And yeah, to Libby's point, like, no one does shitty white people acting shitty to each other better than Succession. And so it's kind of tough to, like, exist in that same universe. I actually think that Natasha Rothwell's character probably is our in. And I think right. The show is sort of doing a disservice because, like, she's not in enough to properly be that. She's kind of sidelined in the story a little bit. And I wish she was sort of more pervasive. I wish instead of just being the spa manager, like, I wish she was, like, assistant to the manager. You know, so she was closer to some of these other things.
Stepping in when someone was off having his adventures with his underlings.
Yeah, I think it would serve as, like, a better anchor for the show, at least from my perspective. Like, I think that would serve the show well, especially in a show that's filled with deplorable people doing fairly deplorable things.
I guess one of the notes I'd make just about the balance of it, and one of the things that, again, I really admire about the show, is that I kind of respect it for being a true ensemble. So, like, instead of kind of giving you, like, a specific person to latch onto and saying, this is the person, one, I think that helps with the mystery of who died, like, that aspect of the thing that lingers over the entire show and is obviously, again, important and doubly emphasized by the score. Like, the score kind of constantly reminds you of that level of tension. But I think that by doing that, by not giving you one person to kind of, you know, latch onto or follow or to anchor the show and kind of relying on the location and the situation to anchor the show, that it invites you to put yourself in the show and to say, I would be here. Like, if I was a character in the show, I would be this guest, or I would be this employee, or I would be in this situation. And by doing that, I think it allows you to kind of live in both worlds, which is what it wants you to do. And it allows you to kind of be uncomfortable, really, really, really uncomfortable one moment, and then laughing your ass off the next. And again, like, I to me, it works perfectly on those levels. And I saw, I think it was Alison Herman at The Ringer, who tweeted something about this, where she said, I don't understand people who don't want to be, like, emotionally overwhelmed by the TV shows they watch. And then, like, the follow-up tweet was something to the effect of, oh, The White Lotus is uncomfortable? Yes! Like, yes! Like, that is, you want to be uncomfortable. Like, I want to be uncomfortable when I watch this show. And I want to feel those kind of, I want to be pushed toward one of those extremes whenever I watch anything. And, you know, I think that applies to Succession. The funny thing to me, I guess, is when we talk about Succession compared to The White Lotus, the incorrect but persistent narrative around Succession is that it takes a while for it to kick in. Like, it takes 6 episodes or so before you're like, oh, wow, this thing's great. When in fact it was good from the get-go. But The White Lotus only has 6 episodes. It's not going to keep going. It's got this story and that's it. And it lays you right down in the middle of it, and you're off to the races. And you either sink or swim. And
sorry,
Leo,
it's not
going to
get good. The more I hear people talk about The White Lotus, the less I like The White Lotus, I guess.
that's sort of the camp that I'm in. It's exactly that. And I don't know. It's not like a I don't know, like an anti-authoritarian streak in me to be like, I don't know about that. But I think I don't like things overly praising something that's fine. I think that's sort of what it is. It's like, this thing is fine.
There is a natural dissonance. There is a natural dissonance when your own view,
when it's the entire sort of like machinery, like the industry is like, this thing is great and everyone is great in it and it is Mike White's magnum opus and it's fantastic. Also, I will say this. I haven't laughed out loud once watching this show, so I don't know. I don't know how funny it is.
The "why are you tired" line is so
good. It's a very, and this might be my number one issue with the show. There is so much dialogue that I could see coming out of Mike White's mouth, coming out of other characters' mouths, and it just, and granted he wrote it, so that makes sense, but it does not. When that happens, I'm immediately taken aback and taken out of the show, and so like, if that happens in any show, I can't be like, this show's the greatest. Except for those 5 moments when I was like, no character speaks like that. That was like, that is not normal or real. And just, I think that kind of stuff takes me out immediately. And that's always going to be an issue with me.
I want to go back to the Alison Herman thing, actually, then. I understand the idea of like, you know, you should want to feel intensely, but there's a reason it's so hard for me to watch my screeners right now, and it's so easy to go and rewatch things that I consider television comfort food, like when life is causing so much anxiety because of the income inequality. It's hard to enjoy wanting to spend time with these people. The problem with The White Lotus, a show that I like and I'm excited to see the final 2 episodes of, the problem with The White Lotus is that everyone is being completely earnest at all times, which is great, but it's horrifying to see these people and know that these are the things that they believe, and to know that that is the world we're living in. And yeah, it's great. Mike White's doing a great job of capturing the futility of human existence, but also I'm not like having a good time watching like watching the world burn. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a totally fair point to be like, if the world is on fire outside your window, if you're the "this is fine, everything is fine" dog, do you like, it's like, and that's what that dog is like, okay, I'll watch White Lotus and just add to the general anxiety I already have about everything that's going on in the world.
Yeah. It's by the time that the teenage son, who has not been developed whatsoever, he watches porn, apparently.
That's what kids do, Libby. Well,
sometimes he watches porn. A lot of the times he's playing video games.
I mean, maybe I'm just defensive of him because I would lose my mind if my Switch got ruined by the ocean.
A Switch Lite? I think it's a Switch Lite, by the way.
Oh, what the fuck? No way.
I don't think it has the removable controllers.
Oh, that's just stupid. But by the time he says, "Who gives a shit what anyone cares about, like, we're all parasites and the earth is dying, like, what are we doing here, what are we," I'm like, yeah, I genuinely thought about turning it off because I was like, yeah, it's a good point, I should fucking go outside. So I don't know, I don't know how into nihilism TV I am right now, but Mike White's doing it as well as maybe, yeah.
This goes back to my earlier point about the characters feeling like they're saying Mike White lines in Mike White voice. A lot of those dinner scenes specifically feel like little plays where the dialogue is so fucking on the nose.
And I love that dinner scene because I think everyone delivers it really well. But at the luau, it does feel a little bit like a Facebook argument. Like,
there are so many times during the show where I go, this is Mike White trying to come to terms with the current cultural movement of like what young people think. He is writing. There are so many words that come out of the daughter and the daughter's friend's mouth. I'm like, this is what Mike White thinks teenagers talk like. It just feels that way to me. Maybe I might be alone in that thought, but like, none of that rings true. There is more truth in like it, and I think that's my primary issue. The older characters start to speak more like real people because that's closer to who Mike White is, and the younger characters feel like he is putting words in their mouth to, like, be these vessels for these thoughts, as opposed to being actual characters.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair criticism. It wasn't something that pinged me until you started talking about it, so thanks for that.
Do you want an ASMR? Fuck that. What did I write to you, Ben? Where I was like, it was like,
oh, you were so mad. You were so mad.
Like, triggered. So it was like all the. It was like culture war bingo, and like he got all 5 in 10 minutes, and it's like, what in the fuck is happening on this show?
I mean, one, I guess I just like the writing more than you. Two, I still think that a lot of the words that he's choosing are very purposefully chosen. Three, I don't have a teen, and I don't know a lot of teens, so I can't speak to how teens speak, but this sounds just as good as what's on Euphoria, so I don't care.
Euphoria also is not real.
Well, I know none of it's real. Like, until we have a 13-year-old in the writer's room, you know, pumping this stuff out, or you're just recording your children in secret, which neither of which should happen, by the way.
Wait, is generation
this is kind of the reality
good?
We live in. Nope. So, I understand what you're saying. I obviously can't argue with it, because it is just a matter of taste and a matter of, like, how these words hit your ears. So, like, that subjectivity is just going to exist. The only thing that I'll speak to is the desire to spend time in a world with these people. And it's the same defense that I'm out whenever somebody brings up this argument in regard to Succession. To me, I think this is one of the major issues of our time. I think it's something that a lot of people are still having a hard time wrapping their heads around. I think that for so many generations, the American dream was personified by being rich. And if you became rich, if you became wealthy and secure, then you did something right. Like, you did something good and you earned it. And we are slowly trying to peel that back to expose that a lot of the people who are rich didn't necessarily do something good to earn it. They inherited it. They stole it. They, you know, protected it for themselves at the expense of many, many other people. And I think that this show serves as a reminder of exactly those things for people, especially, again, a lot of people who probably subscribe to HBO who may not want to hear it, but maybe a few of them do. And for those of us who are already well aware of it, at least for me and a couple other people out there, there's a lot of enjoyment in that takedown, as well as the way that the takedown is built and constructed. So, like, I think it serves a valuable purpose. I'm very glad that I enjoy it. I'm not glad that I enjoy it more than you. I wish everyone could enjoy it the same like we do with Succession, but I do think that there's plenty of valid arguments to be made in regard to why people should want to watch this and should give it the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, and I think that's totally admirable, and I love that that's what the show is doing. I also want to make sure, because I've been fairly negative, I do enjoy the show. I just don't think it is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Listen, we've got a list of 21 shows, best of the year so far. We'll see what makes the top 10. We'll see at the end of the year what on the top 10 list.
Right now, White Lotus probably does make a top 10 list. I mean, I haven't watched as much as you have, Ben, but, like, it probably does, just because, like, as I've said, it is incredibly well made, and there are some very good performances on it. I just don't think it's going to make a top 10 of all time list, or, like, it's not in that ballpark for me. Also, just to be clear, the words are fat, cuck, and triggered all show up within 10 minutes of each other in the pilot. And that is definitely, like, 2020 meme bingo. Did you get them all? These are things the kids say. They say these things.
I will say, I will reiterate that I enjoy the show more and more with each episode. I like it. I'm excited to see how it ends up. And although I have spent plenty of time on the podcast pointing out things that I didn't like about it, I point those things out because it's good, and it can stand up to criticism, like, yeah. And Mike White is so talented and so able. It has proven time and again his ability to make great television. You know, it can take a little criticism, and I still enjoy it. I appreciate conversations like this, because when I don't completely love something, that it feels like the critical circles have all kind of taken and held close to their heart, it is disorienting. And it's nice to see where I might be disconnecting. And Ben, I appreciate seeing the things that work for you, because it helps me to figure out what doesn't work for me. Happy we had this conversation, and White Lotus is good and you should check it out.
It's kind of strange, because like the things that you aren't vibing with, Libby, are like different from the things that I'm not vibing with. And they're obviously different from the things that Ben clearly is vibing with on the show. But like
I think you should leave season 2 all over again. And
I think we all know that Coffin Flop is the best sketch. I think you should leave season 2. We'll leave it at that. Here's what I'll say. Last thing on White Lotus. As a group of people who are all rooting for the fall of old white men, more than anyone, I do incredibly appreciate, and I hope there's more of it in the last two episodes, the White Lotus is shining a light on the fact that Hawaii's history is completely and utterly fucked up. And I hope it does enough of that to sort of like the same way that Watchmen sort of shined a light on like Tulsa, to be like, this thing happened and it's not taught. It's like, this thing happened to Hawaii and no one knows about it.
That's really interesting. And I am happy to see more shows that examine fucked U.S. history, which is why I think you could expect some of us to talk about Reservation Dogs next week as it premieres on Monday, FX's new show about a coming of age story set on a reservation in Oklahoma, I believe. Taika Waititi is an executive producer. He co-wrote the pilot. Everyone who writes and directs on the show is an Indigenous American, I believe. I'm not quite sure on that. I've seen the first two episodes and they're good. I'm into it. I'm super into it. And congratulations to FX for making a show not about an old white man, or a young white man.
Millions of Screens is a production of the Penske Media Corporation. Anywhere, our theme music features excerpts with a classic YouTube video, Bjork Talking About TV, and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Editor-in-Chief is Dana Harris-Bryson. Our publisher is James Israel. And we don't have an executive editor. Come work for IndieWire. Ben needs help. Our favorite Mike White performances as an actor are as Ned Schneebly in School of Rock, as the unnamed gas station clerk in Zombieland, and as Mr. Burke in Orange County. Millions of Screens strongly endorses watching Mike
Survivor.
White. Survivor. He's also in Survivor. That's not what I was going to say. Strongly watching Mike White as Chip Kelly, Kim Kelly's older brother, on Freaks and Geeks.
Whoa. That's wild.
You can find us on Twitter at Million Screens, at Midwest Spitfire, Ben T. Travers, and at Leo Garcia. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. So leave a review. Let us know what you think. This is Ben, Libby, and Leo. Remind you, as always, they shouldn't let poets lie to you.
You shouldn't let poets lie to you.
Ain't nothing wrong with a couple of cold brews and a cool podcast.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.